Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We are podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Later in the show, we're going to be talking to Beth Serdut. We're going to be talking to Billy Blair of the Santa Fe Community Foundation, and we're going to be talking about the new play that's being performed, The Rabbit Hole. But
that sounds like a big show.
But first, I have some very good news. In fact, Al Dearman, you've got some very good news.
I do. I'm here with Cindy Scullin, who's been my partner in the morning during the fun drive.
Hi, Mary Charlotte.
Hi,
thanks
Cindy.
For that music. Your theme music is Dancing in the Street music.
And
yes,
we're dancing in the studios right now because we had a generous benefactor end the fun drive for us in the
amazing.
Last hour. It
amazing.
Is amazing. It's about an $8,000 contribution, and that is just, whoa, baby. And the idea was to offer, as a thank you gift, the naming rights to the newsroom. Isn't that something?
Is this donor going to name it after him or herself, or will it perhaps be called the Noam Chomsky newsroom, or?
Well, that's why I'm not revealing who it is yet, because that's still unclear.
Okay.
There are some options, but it's very exciting, and we're so appreciative of that. And that was the big idea of the morning. I have to say I was a little skeptical, but man, breathless.
Has anyone said Cindy is a genius yet?
No.
I think I mentioned that. Well, I said it to her quietly. Yeah.
What was really great was that it was Democracy Now! In the BBC, and we all, everybody here, appreciates how much importance lies in having unfiltered, uncensored news, and to have the newsroom named on behalf of somebody who's really important in a listener's life is just fantastic.
Bill was a little nervous that it might be the Pete Domenici newsroom. Or I'm kidding.
John
I'm kidding.
Greenspan, are you listening?
I'm kidding. But it's great. And we're so thankful to everybody, large contributor and small contributors. That's an important point.
Yeah, Mary Charlotte, we've had $1 contributions come in early in the morning, which was fantastic.
Every dollar counts.
It
this
does.
Is the era in which we're living. And not only does it count for us, but it counts for you, the listener, because that means you can be counted and you are part of the greater KSFR community. And we are so grateful to all of the people who did contribute to this fund drive. And for those of you who didn't and have this sort of nagging, abiding itch to contribute that has not yet been fulfilled, that fulfillment may occur via this thing called the internet. And so you go to ksfr.org and there's a little thing that says Pledge Now. You hit it, and if 2 months from now you're listening to this show or any show on KSFR and say, boy, you know, I wish I'd contributed, you still can. You can even do it today.
Brilliant.
So it is always
there's
ongoing.
Always the opportunity for redemption.
There's always the opportunity
well,
for redemption.
Well, and look at it this way. You are starting the fall fun drive.
You know
but
what?
I did, but
that's
I, but
the
you
last
know,
you'll hear of it.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, I want to just say that I really want to celebrate what's happened this morning and happened the last 2.5 weeks right now. Let's not talk about the fall fun drive for a little
great.
While.
Well, you know, if we could get the electricity free, which may be if we get enough solar photovoltaic panels, we can actually do that.
We're always open to donations of solar photovoltaic panels as well. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the KSFR Santa Fe Radio Cafe. And we're going to go into our first segment now, which I recorded yesterday. We've got a couple of segments coming up, three to total. And I am delighted that we have finished the fun drive. It went a little longer, but not much longer than usual. So we're greatly happy about that. And I am also delighted to be getting back to normal programming and have full focus on the guests themselves, and that's what it's all about. And once again, thank you to the listeners, and we always appreciate your comments. You know, you comment during the fun drive about the shows you like. You can always comment to me at radiocafe@ksfr.org by email. So we continue to be your public radio station. Cindy, Dal, thanks so much. We're going to go to the first our first segment. We'll be back in a little while. I'd like now to welcome Kent Kirkpatrick. He's the director of the play Rabbit Hole, which is opening this weekend at El Museo Cultural. And I'd like to welcome actors Mona Malik and Dylan Marshall. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, this is a production of Ironweed Productions with Scott Harrison, who is not with us today, but I had to laugh because yet another tense personal drama chosen by Scott. Is that correct?
Well, I wouldn't say that he always chooses tense personal dramas. I think he chooses...
You wouldn't?
Well, he chooses good American plays.
Right.
And they happen to be... dramas.
Okay. Well, this one is heavy duty. It's a very interesting play, Rabbit Hole, in which we are dealing with, and I know you don't want to go into too many details here, but a terrible family loss.
Right.
And basically how people grieve.
Right.
And you are the mother, Mona, in the family, and I guess the central character around whose emotional complexity we, the audience, are pretty much turning.
Yeah, we get to watch the journey of this family through Becca, mostly.
Right.
Becca being your character.
My character, that's right.
And who is I guess we say sort of young woman with a much younger sister who is getting into big trouble all the time. The younger yeah. sister is a terrific character who starts out talking, and I think the wonderful thing about this play is exemplified right in the first scene where she's talking about some trouble she got into, which turns out to be a barroom fight.
Right.
But you learn things little by little, and it just sort of gets worse and escalates.
Yeah. That's a great way to put it.
Yeah. Yeah. What's interesting about it, even though it is a family dealing with, you know, intense emotions and upset and turmoil, it's surprisingly funny, this play. Surprisingly funny. You mentioned the younger sister. She's a riot. She's very funny. And she tells a story about a bar fight, which is very entertaining.
Right. And ends up having perhaps a little more wisdom than we might have given her credit for.
Right. Yeah.
So one thing that I think is the mark of a really good play is when the dialogue shows us the kind of ridiculous things that we really do.
Uh-huh.
And I saw that in the relationship between your character, Mona, and Scott Harrison, who plays your husband, and the kind of passive-aggressive and not quite speaking the truth that goes on in many relationships is really well-developed.
Yeah, I really think he crafted a long-term relationship very well. You know, the sort of the marriage relationship and all the things that you just assume and take for granted, but you end up being wrong about, I think are very well crafted. And it's very funny, you know, watching these people stumble through. There's a lot that's very funny about it because we take each other for granted in our own lives. And you see that very, very clearly between these two characters, between Becca and Howie.
You also, it's almost as if there's like the equivalent of a talking stick and who gets to be mad. Like first one person's mad and then they kind of pass it off to the other person.
Yeah, someone's always mad.
It's quite something. I mean, I have been watching plays here in Santa Fe for a long time, and I have to say the Ironweed does a terrific job, and you actors and you as a director do a terrific job in bringing us into a world and actually, and I just saw the rehearsal, so I'm sure the play will be better, but actually holding us there to where I, in the audience, my critical faculties are going away, and I'm just like, oh no, what's going to happen next?
Oh, wow. Well, thank you. Thanks. Yeah. And I was going to say to you, I wish you would come sometime when there's an audience, because you always see plays by yourself.
Yeah, that's true. Sometimes bring the dachshund.
Yeah.
No, it's much better, because there's that tension that happens when there's an audience in
right.
front of you and you
right.
really have to perform. Your character, Dylan Marshall, is a young man, probably about the age that you are, you're a junior in high school, who has made a mistake and is trying to deal with it.
Yeah, well, that's one thing that I'm working on, is trying to deal with that mistake in such a way that it seems realistic, and I haven't done anything like that in my life, obviously. But it's enjoyable trying to find something that I can relate with it and just using those emotions.
How do you do that, for example, in the case of this play?
I'm not really sure. It's an interesting thing. I just kind of seem to get into it through thinking about past experiences that I've had that kind of relate on a small level, but obviously aren't.
So you
aren't
use a small mistake and go emotionally there to make a big thing out of it.
Yeah, and multiply it to the extent that it can seem realistic.
And I suppose that's what all actors have to do anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that's where you start, and then what ends up happening in rehearsal and why it works so well, I think, with Ironweed is that then it just becomes about the space between the actors. It's not about continuing to hold on to that thing you used originally, but to be present with the person you're working with and have that space to hold the reality of what's actually happening.
And that's very well supported by the playwright. The text of this play is really good.
It is very, very,
very good.
David Lindsay Abaire.
Right.
Who is that?
Well, he wrote a couple of plays. Actually, they did one of his plays at the College of Santa Fe maybe 3-4 years ago called Kimberly Akimbo that Peter Zapp directed. And he did this play. It was on Broadway in 2006. Cynthia Nixon got a Tony Award for the role. And he's a young, hot writer. He's actually doing the screenplay for Spider-Man 4 now.
And we won't discuss what the concept selling out might or might not mean. right here and now.
Right.
But it's a great, it's a wonderful play. Why is it called Rabbit Hole? There's a great fractal image on the flyer that you're sending out.
Let Dylan answer that. That sort of, it's comes into his character.
Yeah, well, my character writes a story to give to Becca's family, and it has to do with parallel universes, and he uses a metaphor of rabbit holes to get into those parallel universes where other things are possible and anything is possible.
And as a way of dealing with grief, if there is a parallel universe, maybe things are better somewhere else.
Exactly.
Right, and just I think having the idea that somewhere else things are better opens up a possibility of even here, now, at this moment, you can choose a path.
There's a reference to the way grief and dealing with grieving is constructed in our culture that your character brings out, going to these grief support group meetings and coming back and being disgusted at the just over-religiosity of it and kind of the simple-minded religiosity of it.
Right. That definitely is something that annoys my character greatly. This idea that there's a black and white way to deal with anything, but especially this issue.
Can you give away that one line about God needing another angel?
It's a good line.
Her favorite line that she hears is that God needs another angel. And her response is, what is that? He's God. Why doesn't he make another angel?
Yeah.
We're talking about...
You know, what's interesting... I'm sorry.
We're talking about the play Rabbit Hole, which is opening at El Museo Cultural this weekend. Go ahead.
Yeah, this play, I think it's going to be one of the great American plays, you know, as time goes on. But interesting, it breaks a tradition. I think we've seen a lot of American plays about very dysfunctional families. Death of a Salesman, Long Day's Journey Into Night, you know, those sorts of plays. And I think the family in this play is a very functional family. Very functional.
Yeah.
Because they are expressive with each other.
Right.
And you know, we as an audience get to laugh at them. And they're not intentionally funny, but they're funny. Their behavior is funny. And we see them mad at each other. We see them upset. You know, we see all the gamut of the drama, you know, from comedy to tragedy in this family. And I think it's a very interesting play in the how healthy they really are in dealing with this.
The character played by Scott Harrison, Howie, your character's husband, Mona, is just unbelievably considerate, especially toward the beginning when his wife is acting out. He just says, "Okay, dear, you go ahead and do that," and he's not being obnoxious about it. He really is, until he gets to his own breaking points. And it's very interesting to be sitting in the audience and watching where people break.
Right. And I think that goes back to something that what Kent just said. It's these people, what you're watching is them function. you know, and you're watching them work through and function and love each other and help each other in their own ways.
When you direct a play like this, Kent, I think you make very good use of silence. Mm. There's a lot of dialogue, and then there's a place where people stop. And at those moments, I mean, how do you use silence?
Well, a lot of it's in the script. You know, the playwright will write a pause or write a beat. I think, you know, it's also, I haven't really had to impose silences on them. It's very organic. I think the actors, because the script is so strong, the actors find those things naturally. But, you know, of course, you want space for the audience to be able to absorb things. So, yeah, you intentionally use silence.
What has the rehearsal process been like? I mean, when you were in a play like this, playing the role of a wife and a grieving person and all of that, I would think that the more you rehearse, the more you grow into each other as characters.
Well, that's always true. I mean, and that's true, too, once an audience begins to share the space with us. It shifts what the play is because you're sharing it with other people. And you do. I mean, the longer, in some ways, the longer the rehearse, the better off you are. Because you get to know each other and just feel what's going on in a different way than if you just run up to it and go.
What have been your challenges? I guess it's a pleasure to direct a play that is so well written and you've got a cast of very good actors. What are the greatest challenges for you in directing it?
Not being afraid of it, because it is, you know, we've gone pretty deep with this play, and when I read it, I thought, you know, they don't even really need a director. It's so well written. I mean, this could be staged by itself. It's so well written, but I think my job has been to continue to challenge and to push, and you know, to go beyond some of the first choices, and you know, I think that is the biggest challenge for this particular play.
Yeah, and I would say that you can't not direct this piece. I would argue with Kent on that one. I think when
being
I read this piece, right, when I read this piece, it frightened me, which was one of the reasons I wanted to do it. And I thought, oh God, we need a really fine director. because it is very well written, but you need a gentle hand with it.
Do you ever come to a point when you're acting a play like this where there's a line that you would have liked to say a different way?
Then I'm directed?
Then it's written.
Yeah, and actually during the rehearsal process that happens.
Do you have any flexibility with that? I know there's sort of rules about sticking to the play the way it is.
We've followed the text exactly in this play. Some plays, you know, it sort of depends on the play. But I feel like this one is so well written that to honor the text is, you know, there's something there, you know. And if when you do honor the text, you learn what the playwright's intentions are.
Right.
And if you change those intentions, then you muddy the waters.
Dylan Marshall, Mona Malik, and Kent Kirkpatrick. The play is Rabbit Hole. It opens on the 9th of April. That's coming right up this week. And it runs Thursdays through Saturdays at 8 o'clock in the evening and then Sundays at 2 o'clock at El Museo Cultural through the 26th of April. For more information, you can call 660-2379. Thank you all so much for being here with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you
again.
Thank you.
I'd like to welcome Billy Blair. She's the president of the Santa Fe Community Foundation. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
It's good to have you back. It's been quite a while. So you are, first of all, people who are working in foundations and in nonprofits right now are facing some challenges.
It's very tough times, and especially for our nonprofits. And as you probably know, foundation endowments are down. Nationwide, they're down anywhere from 30 to 35%. They're down in Santa Fe as well. There are foundations that are actually suspending funding. Funding is down from government sources. Funding is down from private individual donors. So we decided to try to do something about that at the Santa Fe Community Foundation.
How does the Santa Fe Community Foundation work in the first place?
Well, first of all, what we're doing now is a little bit an anomaly because we are endowment-based, which means that we raise funds and we use only the earnings off those funds to make grants.
So you're giving people negative grants this year?
Nope. Actually, we still have money. We will be making grants. We have our regular grant cycle this year. We anticipate making as much in grants as last year, and we hope to actually make more.
Really?
Because our payoff is based on a 12-quarter rolling average. So even though we've had these down quarters, we're still going against some very good ones.
Very interesting. So you're not really living quarter to quarter. You're looking at a much longer chunk of time.
Longer chunk of time, not hand to mouth.
Right. Very interesting. And so you make grants to people in the Santa Fe area?
To nonprofits.
To nonprofits.
We grant out to nonprofits, right.
And how do they apply or how do you pick people?
Well, they apply. We have a deadline, which this year is June 27. Everything's posted online at our website, which is santafecf.org, the guidelines. And we do site visits. We look into the financials. We interview the nonprofit. And then we rank the nonprofits and based on criteria the public has established for us, the community has established, and we make grants generally in the fall.
So you have a program that you're doing now called Community of Care, and that is to really take care of, it's a fund to take care of people who are in emergency situations of one kind or another.
That's exactly right. It's for right now, because what we recognized is that nonprofits can't wait until this fall to get grants. That there are nonprofits that are meeting urgent needs, people who are hungry, people who are homeless, people who have other just basic needs, and these nonprofits don't have the resources to serve all the people they're serving. Homelessness is up 66%.
Is that right?
At St. Elizabeth's Shelter.
Good
66%.
Heavens.
Food for Santa Fe, you may be familiar with their operation. 2 weeks ago, they usually served until 9 o'clock. They had to close at 8:30. And you know why? They ran out of bags of food.
Oh, boy.
There had been so many people driving through. And they've already increased the number of bags they make by 25%.
So it really is a clear cause and effect, basically, what's going on in New York, Wall Street, banks, and what was happening on the streets of Santa Fe. Do we know who these people are, people who are newly homeless, newly hungry? Are they people who just lost their job, lost their apartment? What's going on?
That's right. People who've actually lost their jobs, who have a mortgage, who may have a mortgage that's $900, doesn't seem like much to many people. Suddenly, you have no job, you can't pay the mortgage, you can't buy food for your family. Older people who are living on fixed incomes and prices have gone up for things, and they have to decide week by week, are they going to get medicine? Are they going to get food? Are they going to pay the utility bills when it's been cold? And it has been cold this winter.
It has indeed. And so here you have a quick response. Again, how does it work? They come to the Santa Fe Community Foundation and say, here we are, help.
Well, remember, it's nonprofits we're helping, not individuals.
Right.
We fund nonprofits. But what's really interesting and exciting about this campaign, and I think that you got our email, is that correct? Is we sent an email out first 2 weeks ago to people in our database, people for whom we already had email addresses, like yourself, and we asked them to simply give $75, to give $75 now online. And so everybody who got that email could go online, click through, use an automated system, use their credit card, give $75 or whatever number they decided to give. We asked them also to forward that message to five other people. Somebody, a friend said, I got your chain letter, Billy.
Right.
Well, it is a chain letter in a way, and it's what they call, we don't like to use this word, it's like viral marketing.
Right.
It's the same way MoveOn.org raised money. It's the same way Obama got a lot of people behind his campaign. And we thought that it could work at that level. It could work in Santa Fe.
Now, is it working?
first week, we got $20,000. We think that's pretty remarkable.
Indeed.
And in small sums, and people who had never given through the Santa Fe Community Foundation before. And there is on each, there'll be a weekly e-blast. The first one was an appeal from me, so you get to see a 1 minute, 3 second, terrible Billy Blair video. The second week, Mayor David Koss did the video for us. This week, Simon Brackley, who's the CEO of the Chamber of Commerce, will be doing it. The next week, Robin Martin, who is the publisher of the New Mexican, will be doing it. And so people have a chance to see that video, to see that appeal, and also to see on that website who's already given, who's in the community of care in Santa Fe. And it was really interesting because I actually was away on vacation last week, and I came back today to check in and see what was happening, and was told by our office manager that the most visited site when people get that email is people checking in to see who else has given.
Is that right?
Because they want to see, well, you know, there's Mary Charlotte, I know her. Right. If it's good enough for her, I'm going to give too. And people have given different amounts. People have given $25. People have given $2,500. And you know what? When you put it all together, it all makes a lot of money. Our goal is to raise at least $75,000 and then to distribute that immediately this month and next month to nonprofits that have the most immediate need.
And are you seeing that primarily in hunger and homelessness?
We see it everywhere. But we identified that as the need that had that could not be go without being addressed right now. What we see is we see that nonprofits are needing help more than ever before. We did a convening back in mid-February for nonprofits, which outlined the possibilities for them from everything from collaborations to partnerships to outright mergers. Because nationwide, the experts say that there will be 100,000 to 200,000 nonprofits that will shut their doors this year.
And merging to when you have two or more organizations that have very similar missions, you can keep them all alive.
Exactly, and there are a lot of economies of scale, as you know. I mean,
right.
you can share office space, you can share some staff, you can share front office staff, equipment, and still get your mission done. If your mission is educating children, or your mission is providing health care, or your mission is feeding the hungry, that you can come together and do that.
And maybe even learn things from each other that you wouldn't have learned if they were always separate and competing for the same funds.
Learn a lot. We learned something very interesting from this convening, and that is that executive directors of nonprofits who are new to Santa Fe were much more willing and interested in looking at mergers.
Really?
Yes.
And so it's sort of like if you've been here for longer, the territorial walls are a little thicker.
I think, don't you?
I guess.
I think that's probably what happens. But we have actually four sets of organizations that came out of this that want to explore some possibilities. So we consider that a really huge success.
We're talking to Billy Blair, president of the Santa Fe Community Foundation. So what else do you want to let people know about the foundation and about how they can be involved? Certainly they can contribute their $75.
Well, it would be great if people who get this email will not just forward it on to five people, that chain letter, but to as many people as they know. Because, you know, this is the same way the empty stocking fund is built at Christmas time. That's a six-week campaign. People's names are published in the newspaper. This year we raised almost $300,000. We would aspire to do this for the community of care, because the need is so great right now for hunger and homelessness and those basic causes. We also do many other things. As you know, we've talked about it before, we have workshops for nonprofits to help nonprofits learn to keep their books better, have their boards perform better, learn to do marketing, learn how to get on your show. Do they bombard you with requests all the time?
No, they just call. That's all.
They just call? How would you rather people get in touch with you, by phone?
Phone or email. There's a kind of randomness to the whole thing, which seems to work in the long run. But
right. Do people ever stop you on the street or in the grocery store?
Oh, yeah.
Do you still have Robert Knott on the air with you?
Oh, yes, every Friday.
How can you stand it?
I adore him.
No, I do too. I used to work with Robert. And in fact, I hired Robert in Santa Fe. I was the first person to hire him in Santa Fe.
There we have
it. So you can blame me.
We're grateful for you. Grateful that you did it. Well, on that note, ladies and gentlemen, we want to thank you very much for being on with us. Billy Blair, the president of the Santa Fe Community Foundation. And people can reach you at santafecf.org. And is there a telephone number?
988-9715.
Thank you so much for being with us, and please come back again soon.
Thanks a lot.
I'd like now to welcome Beth Serta. She is a visual storyteller, and she was coming here today to talk about the glory that is public radio, but now we don't have to because the fun drive is over.
Well, I'm happy to be here anyhow, Mary Charlotte, but there is the glory of public radio, and not to sound like I'm sucking up to you, but the glory of Mary Charlotte, who tells me, folks, that she is shameless.
What? I didn't say that.
Yes, you did. You did. You did. What we were talking about was, I was saying to Mary Charlotte, since I am also a radio person, that I totally appreciate the fact that she does her homework. You know, when you listen to Terry Gross, who's wonderful, or Susan Stamberg, they have this whole crew of people that do all the research for them. So, and then present it to them. Well, Mary Charlotte's research team, I believe, is Milk Honey and a dachshund.
Yeah.
So she's got these three little pooches.
We know a great deal about bones and where they're buried.
Yes. Well, and that brings up other ideas, too. Where are the bones buried? What are the stories that
yes,
are buried?
Yes, which we're going to get into in just a moment.
We are, but what I wanted to say before we get into that is that if you listen to Mary Charlotte regularly, you will notice that, especially when she's talking to somebody who is a scientist, a doctor, a researcher, a politician, and they've written a book, she'll ask this really prescient question, and they'll say, nobody's ever asked me that before. And that's what I appreciate about Mary Charlotte, is that she does her homework, and she comes at it from a different perspective. So I'm not supposed to be asking you to give money to her show, but give money to her show.
That's right. You can go to the website and hit pledge now. You can go to ksfr.org and hit pledge now, and you can still contribute. No, I thank you for your very kind words, Beth. I appreciate it. And also thank you to all the different people who donated during the fund drive and who understand the value of public radio. You know, we do it twice a year. We have to do it twice a year, and we are so grateful to the people who make it happen and then let it be over so that we can just do our regular programming for the next 6 months. Apropos of which, I want to talk to you and let people know about a workshop that you are going to be teaching called Telling Our Grandmother's Tales Without the Schmaltz, Baba Mises and Cuentas de Abuela.
Well, what I'm inviting people to do is come tell the stories about their grandmothers. Now, when I say without the schmaltz, I mean, I'm not looking for the Hallmark moment, the, oh my Yiddish mama, she was so perfect, she was so sweet, she was so old, because let's face it, folks, we're going to get there.
Well, and there is a genre which I have often thought of as, well, it would be in my case, my grandmother's meatballs. You know, people write us, you know, they go to the workshop and they write a story and they say, I remember when I went to my grandmother's house and she made great meatballs and I'd like to make the meatballs, but she died before I got the recipe. And they're not real, they don't get to the, no pun intended, meat of things. There's something missing, and we have that here in New Mexico with stories of our great, I've read a lot of them, and there's something missing. How do you get past the kind of, I think it's a combination of nostalgia and cliche.
Well, for one thing, for a lot of cultures, we are taught, with good reason, to honor our grandparents. But honoring our grandparents doesn't mean we should marginalize them and put them in some tiny, perfect box, because they are human. And the stories that can come out are really wonderful. Let's face it. Every family is dysfunctional. So let's put the fun back in dysfunctional and tell the stories. I invite people often to come tell it in group form. And it may start out with the meatball chili stories. But once people find out that there were things that happened in their family that happened in other families, and in a group situation, what also comes out is people are very kind to each other, and they're very supportive of each other. And now, it's true. I mean, some families, people aren't talking to each other, and that's kind of an embarrassment until you find out that in almost every family, somebody's not talking to each other. And as to why, sometimes it's been going on for so long, they can't even remember why.
Right. Or it's the Hatfields and the McCoys.
Right. I have that in my family. Something happened between my father, my mother, his brother, and his brother's girlfriend way before I was born, where nobody was talking to each other. And then the kids didn't talk to each other because we were honoring our parents. My grandmothers were very interesting people. And one grandmother in particular would tell stories that changed history. And that's the other thing that happens, is the story that I tell about my grandmother may not be the story that my mother or father remembered.
When you say change history, you don't mean the fate of nations. You mean like they revise their own history.
My grandmother had the 6 million Jews marching down the Ho Chi Minh Trail. I don't know how she got them there.
We're talking to Beth Cernett, just so you know.
This is, and I loved my grandmother. We lived with her for the first 10 years of my life. When I was 5, she showed me my first Playboy magazine. She wasn't showing me the naked lady. She was showing me can-can costumes. My mother walked in and was horrified, absolutely horrified. And then my grandmother smoked 4 packs of unfiltered Lucky Strikes a day, so she had a stroke when she was 68. When she was 80, she called me from the nursing home and asked me if I had ever considered posing for Playboy magazine. Now, is this your grandmother's story? And by the way, you have to come to the workshop to find out the details.
I want to know the details.
Come to the workshop.
Why is it grandmothers and not grandfathers?
Well, grandfathers, absolutely. It seems that a lot of people have more grandmother stories simply because of the times when their grandmothers didn't work, their grandmothers were at home, maybe their grandmothers still lived with them. My grandfather and grandmother were actually divorced and nobody told me. So I saw my grandfather every Friday night for Shabbat dinner when I was a kid, and nobody mentioned that he had run off with another woman.
So he would show up and do the theater of that they were still together?
Well, he didn't pretend they were together. It's just that nobody told me they were apart. My mother said, he's a salesman. He travels. That's why you only see him on Friday nights. And I was so little, I bought it.
Very interesting. So tell us some other kinds of stories of when you do these workshops, stories that come out that don't happen in the first round, where they're just talking about the food that they ate or whatever.
The stories... Actually, here's some of the stories that do come out in the first round. We're a country that is mostly made up of people that came from other places. And so depending on your generation, either your parents or your grandparents have what I consider to be heroic stories about coming from another country, because often they came because they were running from something bad. And I can go online and I can look at the ship's manifest of the names of my grandfather and his mother and his siblings and how much money they had with them.
Heavens.
When they came over on the boat. They had $10 amongst them.
And and you know the name of the boat on which they came?
Yes. Yes. Anybody who came through Ellis Island, you can check.
Right.
And to me, that's an amazement. And my grandfather was only 5 when he came over, so he actually isn't the one that had the story to tell. All sorts of stories come out. And it just depends on the comfort zone. Somebody was telling me a story the other day about having to put her mother into a nursing home. It was time. Her mother had Alzheimer's. And the woman who's telling the story was a beloved only child, as I am. And she put her mother in the nursing home, and things didn't go smoothly. And her mother, within a day, said to her, in a moment of clarity, I never thought you'd do this to me. And I'm sitting at this woman's kitchen table, and the two of us are crying. I didn't have to do that with my mother. My mother died when she was 60. My father is still, you know, healthy and kicking and on his own. But you don't have to go through the experience, but you can picture the experience. And maybe that's not something that somebody's going to tell you right off, because, again, there's a certain amount of guilt. Nobody wants to put their parent in a nursing home. But that's what we do nowadays. We don't keep our elderly at home. We don't live in that same way of a compound. You're going to Indonesia in June, and you will see compounds of people where the blind grandmother is living in her own little house in the family compound.
Right.
And my driver brought me over. He wanted to show me his, quote, pork, meaning his pig. He was very proud of his pork. So we went to visit his pig, and his blind grandmother is feeling her way along the compound wall with cataracts. By the way, something that could be easily fixed here,
right,
but is too expensive to do there.
We're talking to Beth Serdut. She is going to be teaching a 3-session workshop called Babamysis and Cuentas de Abuela, Telling Our Grandmother's Tales Without the Schmaltz. And so you bring a Jewish heritage to this. People bring all their different heritages to this. And, of course, some people are American going way back. You know, maybe their great-great-great-great, whatever number of great-grandparents came over on the Mayflower or something like that.
Or preceded the Mayflower.
Or you have Native American people.
You have Native American people. You have people of Spanish descent who can trace their history back hundreds of years. When I lived in Hawaii and I was doing an article about the Native American Graves Repatriation Act, I would talk to Hawaiians who could chant their history back to King Kamehameha. And they said to me, if you don't know that, how do you know who you are?
Amazing. And the chanting, that's one of those things, stories are held in actual songs and poems.
Yes. And as I think about workshops and what I call prompts, you know, how do you get the... Often if you say to somebody, so tell me a story, they go blank. Even though a lot of people love to tell stories. They love to gossip. They love to say, did you know that? Well, when you put them on the spot, suddenly they can't remember anything.
So did you hear about Anne?
Yes. So I wrote a little piece thinking about prompts. I say, I am a story catcher, inviting you to tell me the tales of your grandparents, of recipes, of cooking, of the horno, of growing, tending, harvesting, butchering, of water rights and wrongs, healing by herbs, by doctors, by la curandera, even by la bruja, of how your grandfather maybe never came home from a war or another woman, or by some miracle he did, of hope, despair, of ghosts, or a recipe that makes your tongue tingle when you think about it, of how your uncle went a little crazy, or your aunt saw visions of work and play, of how this city changed, the land remained. Tell me your stories, old ones, little ones, for in remembering our past, we see our future.
When you're reading that, one of the things that comes to mind is the reality that what most of us are interested in is love and sexuality, and those are things that we never really talk about in terms of our grandparents. When I think of one of my grandparents, she was very unhappily married, and there's a whole big story there, and the details of that are things that we sort of shy away from, even in conversation, much less storytelling or writing.
Well, you know, we are sensual beings, and certainly as children, we never imagined that our parents had sex, except maybe the number of times we have the number of kids in a family.
Right.
I have a friend who comes from a very strict Catholic
family.
And
that's not true all over the world.
No, it is certainly a very American thing. And depending where you grew up, I mean, you and I grew up in New England, where I'm not even sure how people mated with all that plaid and polar fleece. But depending on your culture, you will talk about it. And
I think it was wool back in the day.
It was wool back in the day. Now it's polar fleece. And many, many layers to get through.
ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. Well, maybe we shouldn't go down that path on the radio.
That's the thing. We don't go down that path because there's all sorts of cultural taboos against it. But when you read a really good novel or even a really good memoir, it's all there.
Well, you and I were talking about magical realism earlier and how maybe it is just realism, but we dress it up in a certain way in a fairy tale or in a romantic book or in a, quote, bodice ripper romance where there is real romance in the world and there is real juice in the world. I mean, this life is juicy, and we can talk about that, and it doesn't have to be prurient.
And it doesn't have to be disrespectful.
No, and it doesn't. And we also, many of us come from cultures that say, honor your parents, honor your grandparents. Well, talking about who they are as real people is a way of honoring them.
So when people take a workshop like this, and it's three sessions, so I guess things get to sort of percolate, between the first and second and so on. What do you then do with the stories when they're done? Do you have a performance? Do you put together a little book?
Well, what we're going to do in this particular group is there's three sessions. They're on Thursday nights from 6 to 8, starting April 30th. And I'm doing this at Congregation Bet Tikva on Old Pecos Trail. Best thing to do is probably just call me at 978-793-1062. Yes, it's a Massachusetts number. It's a cell phone.
It's a cell phone.
So what we're going to do for the first session is people come and tell their stories. If you can write them down first, great. But if not, just come tell me the story. I'm a fan of telling a short story, which frankly for my culture is almost impossible. But, I do commentaries for radio, and you can tell an awful lot in 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes. 4 minutes is an eternity.
On this show.
Right. This is a luxury. You told me I had 5 to 7 minutes, and then we were going to do fundraising. So, by the way, Mary Charlotte always prepares. The 2 times I've been on the show, no preparation. We're just winging it here, folks.
That's not true. we're going to give her number again at the end of the show if people are interested.
Okay, but what I would like to say about the three sessions is the first session you come tell your story. And you may find that the story you came with is not the story you leave with because you hear other people's stories and it sparks a memory. The second time, you're going to bring me the honed story. We'll get some feedback. We'll work on it some more. The third time, you're going to tell the story. And on the third session, invite your friends, your family. But be warned, everybody in the family is going to have a different take on the story.
And so this is what happens at the workshop. How do people get I would imagine that at least sometimes there's a kind of transformation that happens for people having not only told but really honed the story.
Often people, first of all, have buried their lead way down in the story. The last workshop I did was called Critter Tales, Yours, Mine, and Ours.
Right.
And I did it at the O'Keeffe. I was hoping people would bring wild animal stories. What I got was a lot of dog stories, which, of course, you would have loved. One kitty story, and there was one quasi-raccoon story. The first story was all about the dog, and it was more, this is how I trained my dog, because this guy was a dog trainer. What I found out was when the dog got off the plane, he was overweight, he was goofy-looking, and the dog was transformed. But I didn't find that out until we were into the third tale. As people told their stories, they became more and more personal. And they talked about why they ended up in Santa Fe. Some of it had to do with having cancer, getting a dog because they needed the company. One woman brought her cat to all her cancer treatments with her.
Wow.
And some of that meant flying back to Philly, and she brought the kitty with her. So it evolves.
Beth Serdut is a visual storyteller. Her workshop is called Bubba Mises and Cuentas de Abuela, Telling Our Grandmother's Stories Without the Schmaltz. You can reach her at the telephone number 978-793-1062. And you can also write to her at info@bethserdut.com, and that's Beth, Surdut.com. thanks so much for being with us. Oh, by the way, the event is Thursdays, starting on April 30th. April 30th, May 7th, and May 14th from 6 to 8 at Bet Tikva. So, thanks. Great to have you on the air again.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. And, for example, if you didn't get all the information about Beth today, you can write to me. Thanks to Marilyn LeBlanc for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, the Jazz Experience. Broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company, I want once again to thank everybody who contributed during the fun drive. We love you all. And for those who still want to contribute, just go straight to the website, ksfr.org. Every penny counts. We thank you so much. Hasta la vista. Ciao.